Good afternoon and welcome into the last Woods and Water South Carolina show of 2019. Going to do a replay of the show Greg Lucas and I did on Joe Cassie Gorges. A lot of information in there. A lot of information, and Greg is actually going to come back in, and we're going to do number two here shortly. So enjoy this one as a prelude to number two coming up in 2020.
I got a guest in the studio with me today. Greg Lucas with the Department of Natural Resources is here. I appreciate him taking time to come in. We're going to talk about Joe Cassie Gorges. And I told Greg how long we had, and he goes, just scratched the surface. So I appreciate him being here. And it is going to be a great show. It's a lot of information. I knew about Joe Cassie Gorges because I knew when they made the original purchase back. And then I was there for Sassafras Mountain for the unveiling of the observation point. And so I'd read up a little bit, but I had no clue how big Joe Cassie Gorges is, not just from an area standpoint, but how much is there for the average person to see. It's just insane.
It is. It's a very large area. We have 33,000 acres in South Carolina, and then North Carolina has another 10,000 acres, and then the whole area, if you count all the protected lands, is 50,000 acres, so it's tremendous.
And it covers a wide variety of altitudes, terrains, from almost what you call tropical rainforest, almost, I guess, with the amount of rain they get up there, to mountaintops, and it is a really diverse place.
It really is. Your show title, Woods and Waters, covers everything pretty much that's up there.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, we're going to get to that. We're going to take the whole show. We're just going to take it slow. We're probably not going to get through a third of what we can talk about, just hitting the high point. So I told Greg, I said, we're just going to do this. We'll go however far. I'll draw a line across my page, and we'll come back in October and do it again. If we can't get through it in two, we'll do another one in January because there's that much to talk about, and we don't want to rush it. But before we get in, I have to tell you this. I was in Chick-fil-A this week, and it's kind of got a little bit to do with this show. I was in Chick-fil-A, and I was getting my order, and there was a gentleman standing there, and I'm like, hey, he looks familiar. Who is here? And when I heard his voice, I knew exactly who it was. It was my high school band director, Dr. Turner, from right here at Bob Jones Academy. And actually, I was a freshman when I first met him. No, because I would have started playing in eighth grade, maybe ninth grade. Anyway, so you figure somewhere I've been around 38, 39 years since I first sat down in his band room and all that. And I told him, I said, Dr. Turner, I said, I have to tell you one thing. Something you said to us way back then, I have used in my life. I have warned my kids out about it. And it's really funny. He would get up, and usually on Monday mornings, he would have a new piece of music for us. Just kind of start Monday off on the wrong foot. Don't give us something we know. Give us something we don't. But he would go through, and he was, all right, now, clarinet, you got to watch this. Brass, you got to watch this. Everybody keep your eyes up here because it's going to move and all. And he said, look, you get in the middle of this thing, and you just lose your way. When you come to the end of the rope, tie a knot and hang on because it'll be over. And I told him, I said, for almost 40 years now, that has been in the back of my head, whether it was being drilled into me in band class or whether I was using it in life or what I was telling my kids, when it doesn't seem like you're going to make it, get to the rope, tie a knot, hang on, because it'll come to an end. And I haven't seen him in probably 30 years, but that is something that's just I use it all the time. It's a great saying. So you can apply that to a little bit of this show because you're going to have to tie a knot and hang on because there's a lot of information. And we're going to try to cover it well, and Greg's going to have to talk more. But anyway, to start off the show, let's get through our calendar of events. It's going to be a real short one because there's only one thing on it. And luckily, Greg brought some information. I had already heard about it. This is National Hunting and Fishing Day, which used to be at the Duke Energy World of Energy. They've moved it. This is the second year. So, Greg, take just a moment and tell us all the activities going on in Seneca on National Hunting and Fishing Day.
Okay. It is at South Cove County Park, as Roger said, for the second year. For 10 years, we were at the World of Energy, at Duke Energy's World of Energy. But it's moved to South Cove. It's a beautiful location. September 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Everything is free.
Free.
We have an amazing array of activities, kayaking, target shooting, fly tying. The archaeologists from SCD&R are going to be there and have some exhibits. just a lot of activities going on all day, and things that will get folks outdoors. And it's a family-oriented event, so it's very family-friendly.
Live wildlife, artifacts, camo hide-and-seek. That's always fun. You get the kids dressed up, turn them loose in the woods, and play tag.
Right. It is a glorified game of tag, and you just can't see them, though.
So. That's right. September 28th, National Hunting and Fishing Day. Like I said, I had it down. He was fortunate enough to bring me some information on it. Directions and information, Facebook.
Facebook. You can go one of the easy ways is to go to the South Cove County Park Facebook site.
Okay.
DNR also has a dedicated web page for that as well. Okay. And so there's lots of different ways you can find out about it.
And it's free. So plan it. Clemson football is not in.
Clemson is away that weekend. We always make sure that we have it on the weekend. National Hunting Fishing Day is traditionally the fourth Saturday in September. But sometimes that hits on a Clemson football game. Yep. So we move it either a week back or a week up.
But luckily this year we're dead on it. Clemson's out of town.
Yes, we're good.
No excuses for people to come because you can TiVo the game.
That's right.
Well, thank you. As always, our calendar events is brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond and Landing and Event Center, where they're still blowing things up and moving dirt and paving new stuff. Thank you for that one. All right. Man, Joe Cassie Gorges. When I contacted Greg about this, he was more than willing to do it. And he said, "Do you have a map?" And I was like, "I don't have a map." So I got this package in the mail like the next day. There's a map. I unfolded the map. What's this map? 4 feet by 3 feet?
It's pretty big.
Pretty. And on one side is the map. And it's waterproof. Now, is this a free map?
It is a free map. Okay. And you can get this map in a lot of different places, one of which is the Clemson, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources
office.
And that's near, for those Clemson folks, that's near the Madryn Center, a few coves around from the Madryn Center. But you can also get it at most of the upstate state parks, like Devil's Fork State Park, Table Rock State Park, Kiwi Toxaway State Park, and at Holly Springs Country Store at the intersection of 11 and 178.
Yes, yeah. They can order it off the DNR website. Is there a place they can go get it off the website?
You can see the map on the DNR website. Okay. It's so huge, though. Yeah. It's really better to have a printed copy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If folks can send me an email or somehow communicate, I'll be glad to mail them out.
And all you got to do to find Greg Lucas is go to the DNR website. Top right-hand corner has got a little Google search bar, and you can go Greg, G-R-E-G, Lucas. Hit enter, and we'll come up with your contact information and some of those things, and you'll send them one.
Yes. Be glad to get one in the mail to them.
So anyway, I got this package. I'm like, yeah, love maps. Open it up, look to the map side. I'm like, oh, yeah, a lot of stuff here. Yeah, I know. I've seen some of that stuff, and I didn't realize it went through there. Then I turned it over. That is when it became very apparent to me that in 40-something minutes, we're just going to scratch the surface of this, folks. This is almost like the milepost in Alaska, because it's got everything you can do up there laid out pretty much. In the interior, it's got a lot of directions and all. We're not going to cover directions because we don't want to lead you astray. There's certain times of year, certain roads are open. You know, you got hunting going on. So get the map. That'll give you directions. What we're going to do is cover all the stuff you can do inside it.
Sounds great.
Sounds good. So. Got a lot of information. And and also, if you want to get a preview before you get your map, you can go look at the Joe Cassie Journal, which is another publication that you put out here, Greg Lucas, with a lot of information. This is the latest one, covers the Sassafras Mountain Tower opening. Also, we'll talk about this later on. But hang on. We're going to take a quick break. More with Greg Lucas and Joe Cassie Gorges when we get back. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We're here with Greg Lucas, and you know you're going to get along with the guy when he says, "Got good music." So anyway, we're going to have fun. Joe Cassie Gorges, talked about it earlier, about 50,000 acres total. How much in
33,000 in South Carolina that South Carolina DNR manages.
You know, I know a little bit of the history of Joe Cassie Gorges. I know some of the players in it to begin with. Take just a moment. How did we come to get what's now currently referred to as the Gorges?
Well, this land was for actually a little more than a century ago in commercial timber production, and it belonged to various different companies, including one called the Poinsett Lumber Company, okay, which was a subsidiary of Singer. And
sewing machine.
So if any of y'all have a wooden Singer sewing cabinet, which a lot of folks do, my sure. wife does, my grandmother had one, that wood probably came from these areas up in northern Pickens and eastern Oconee counties.
Wow.
So fast forward to the early 1900s, folks from Duke Power started looking at the property. Okay. In terms of hydroelectric capacity.
Sure.
And then fast forward like to the 1950s, and they started buying some of the property okay. up. And then you had the creations of Lakes Jocassee and Kiwi, and then the Oconee Nuclear Station.
Right.
Duke Power, now Duke Energy, had a subsidiary called Crescent Resources. It was their
timber management.
Right.
Company.
It was their forest management company. And they had large amounts of land up in the mountains. And as you got further down the road into the 90s, it became more profitable to develop land than it did to cut the timber off of it. So Duke was looking to divest itself of that land. Well, thank goodness Dr. James Timmerman, longtime director of the old South Carolina Wildlife and Marine Resources Department,
right.
and then DNR had been putting a bug in Duke's ear for years, I mean decades literally, and saying, if y'all ever decide to get rid of this land, we would like to have first crack at it.
Okay.
Because, you know, that land was very valuable. You see how many gated communities, the Cliffs communities that are up there. So there were lots of people that wanted this land. Well, Duke was good to their word and offered it, and I think they essentially told DNR, y'all have a year, come up with the money for this. And okay. so Governor David Beasley somehow pushed through a $10 million bond bill through the General Assembly. We had some help from folks like the Conservation Fund and I think it's the Carnegie Mellon Foundation and some others. Mm-hmm. And somehow cobbled together around $23 million and purchased, you know, 30-something thousand acres in 1998. And so it was a great bequest to the people of South Carolina to be able to preserve that land.
Unreal. And I guess, would you say the kind of the end of the whole thing would be the Sassafras Mountains Observation Point? Would you say that's one of the last things to kind of make this all finished?
Yes. A culmination.
Culmination.
Might
there
be
you
a
go.
Good word. Yeah. Not really the end. I think we've got lots more to come, but definitely a culmination. That was a long time coming.
Yeah, it was.
If you go back and look at my Jocassee newsletter over the past decade, I lied a lot of times because I'd say it's going to open in 2016, 2017, 2018. I finally just quit telling people when it was going to open because I had mistold them so many times. But as you know, you were there,
yes.
Roger, but April 22nd on Earth Day, we just had the grandest of grand openings up there. It was really spectacular. And that is a facility that, South Carolinians can just really be proud of. It's the highest point in the state.
Yep.
And it's just a view that I don't think even jumping off rock can equal. It's just an amazing view.
It is an amazing view. That's for certain. And we were up there. It was crystal clear. Blue Sky Day, one of those Chamber of Commerce days.
It really was a Chamber of Commerce day, and it turned out that was one of the last DNR events that our beloved director, Alvin Taylor attended up there and was part of the ceremony. And then, I mean, like a week or two later, he announced
retired.
He was retired.
Yeah.
So it was great having him up there, and he supported that project and was instrumental.
Beginning.
Yes, in the beginning. Yeah, he was all on board, like Dabo says, all in immediately when that was announced. So that was really good.
Well, that's kind of just the introduction to it. The terrain, because you if you're around upstate South Carolina towards the mountains, you hear a lot of times about the Blue Ridge Mountains, and you look at them in the morning and evening, you know exactly why they're called Blue Ridge Mountains. But you'll often hear there's something called the Blue Wall. Talk just a moment about the Blue Wall, because it's a geographic feature in that area of our state that's very unique.
The Blue Wall, I believe that has its origins in Cherokee, but the, you know, specifically where it comes from is the Blue Ridge Escarpment. Right. And that is, if you're talking to a geologist, that's the 2,000 foot vertical uplifting that goes from the Piedmont, which is the toe, literally the toe of the mountains, okay, I think in French, to the Appalachian Mountains. So it's a incredible place of diversity because of the way the elevation changes. It actually changes the weather somewhat. You know, lots of weather systems hit, sure, the Appalachians and do lots of different things. We have a tremendous amount of rainfall. Some parts of the Jocassee Gorges get upwards of 80 inches of rain a year, which is pretty amazing and puts it almost in the rainforest
category.
Of course, the diversity of plants and animals are directly attributable to all of that rainfall. Wherever you have water, you have life.
Sure.
And so we have abundant life up there. And it's a challenge for biologists, wildlife biologists, fisheries biologists, researchers at places like Clemson and Furman and other schools that love to send their scientists up there. So it's just an amazing place. And, you know, as you've alluded to, the number of recreational opportunities is astounding. Everything from hunting and fishing, which I'm sure Roger has talked about, pays the bills for conservation in
it
places
does.
Like this.
Pippin Robertson and Dingle Johnson funds.
Exactly. Yes. I wish those words flew off everybody's tongues like they did yours. When I try to explain that to your average citizen, their eyes glass over in about two sentences.
Yes.
But it is true. Hunters and anglers pay the bills, but we've got a lot of company up there, mountain bikers, paddlers, nature photographers,
birders.
Oh, yeah. It's a birding paradise.
Yes, it is.
So it really is an amazing place.
You know, you mentioned, and I know DNR is up there managing and all. You talked a moment about Indian tribes, because as some people know, and South Carolina was home to quite a few tribes of Indians. The little local tribes weren't very big. Talk about some of the Indian tribes that kind of lived in that area of state.
Right. Well, the main one was the Cherokee,
okay,
and the lower village of the Cherokee in this part of the world is underneath Lake Kiwi now.
Okay.
But it was a very important trading place. It was a very important gathering place. There is a site, I don't think we really talk much about it on this map, but people have probably read about it. It's the petroglyph site,
okay, yeah,
up on Pinnacle Mountain, where right, there are some rock carvings, an incredible number of rock carvings up there on that very high, very beautiful site. And, of course, nobody really knows. They're prehistoric, so we don't know the meaning behind them.
Right.
But somebody obviously took a lot of time to carve literally hundreds of these petroglyphs up there. So it was pretty important. We know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you had people up there called the East Otoes, the Oconee East Otoes, and called the Green Birds, because we used to have a parakeet.
Right, we had the Carolina parakeet, which has been extinct.
Over 100 years.
Yeah,
or so.
For a long yeah. time, that apparently made frequent appearances in that valley, in East Otoe Valley.
Go figure that one. We talk a little bit about the fauna and all that, but it's home and was this discovery place, the Oconee Bell.
Right. The Oconee Bell has a really interesting history. It was first seen and described by François Michaux, a French botanist who was here in the United States in the late 1780s.
Yeah,
and he took a herbarium specimen back to France.
Okay.
Put it in a museum. You fast forward to the mid-1800s, a botanist from Harvard, Asa Gray, decided, he looked at that specimen and wanted to find it. And the problem was Michaud described it as the high mountains of the Carolinas. Well, the botanist from Harvard decided that that meant somewhere like around Mount Mitchell and some of the really high, like 6,000 foot peaks. Well, it was not nearly, you know, it was in Jocassee Valley is where it was.
Okay.
And so he spent most of his career looking for it. And of course, you know, this is in the mid 1800s. So people didn't find out things nearly as quickly as they do now. It was finally rediscovered by an herbalist in Marion, North Carolina, and all was well. It was at the end of Asa Gray's career. I'm not sure. I can never remember if he actually came and saw it in its native location, but he named it, and so it's one of the iconic species, definitely wildflower species
in that area
of the Jocassee Gorges, and people make a pilgrimage in mid-March to come see it bloom. It is quite beautiful.
You think about it, a guy who spends his life or part of his life looking for a plant, and it's right in our back door. And that was one thing that was brought up when they dedicated the Sassafras Mountain overlook, that this is going to be a place of travel destination, that people would come to be on the highest point in each state, and that people come because you can see four states from one place. We don't realize how much of a destination state we are until you start looking at places like this.
Right. Jocassee Gorges was listed by National Geographic in one of their special publications a few years as one of the 50 last greatest places. So it definitely is a destination that people travel to. And we tend to take it for granted, which is too bad, really.
Well, I'm 52 and I've lived in South Carolina my whole life. And the first time I've been up, of course, I go up and fish the Chattooga a little bit. But my first real thing was to the dedication of Sassafras Mountain. And I'm an outdoorsman, quote unquote. All right. Hang on through the break, because like I said, we just scratched. We haven't made it maybe three quarters of the way down the first fold of the map. This might be a six-part series, folks, but it's good. Hang on through the break. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina and Greg Lucas from the Department of Natural Resources on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Back with Greg Lucas from Department of Natural Resources. Talking about Jocassee Gorges. Seriously, Greg, this might turn into like a 5 or 6 part miniseries.
It's a big place, and there's a lot to talk about.
But it's good stuff. We're not just filling in airtime here, people. We're giving you stuff that you can use, go enjoy 12 months out of the year. Year round. There's something to do up there year round. Especially in June, July, and August when it's probably 10 degrees cooler up there. And especially with all the rain, you can get down in the woods. It's probably even cooler where it's damp.
Right.
So lots of stuff to do. One thing we are blessed with in South Carolina is water. We talked about how much water they get up there. We've got lakes, rivers, and streams, and all the way to the ocean. I mean, we got water from, you know, to enjoy probably more than any other state. Maybe we share that a little bit with North Carolina because they got some mountains. Maybe Washington State with their mountains, you get a little bit of the same thing. But Jocassee Gorge is full of waters, and I've had Mr. King on talking about his waterfowl hike books. We got some waterfalls up in Jocassee Gorge. Let's talk just a minute about some of those.
We do. We have several that are noteworthy, not only because of their because of the view, but also because of how easy they are to get to. One that local folks might be familiar with is Twin Falls in East Otoe Valley, and you can drive to. There's a little viewing spot. Oh, it's probably a quarter of a mile away. That's very, you know, a very easy to walk to get. It's a beautiful waterfall. The other two that come to mind quickly. One is in South Carolina, Lower Whitewater Falls, but just up the Whitewater River, about 2 miles, is Upper Whitewater Falls. Upper Whitewater Falls is very easy to get to, and you go to a viewing platform. I think it's about a quarter of a mile walk. Lower Whitewater Falls, which is near Bad Creek Hydro Project,
right? Yes,
up on 130, up above Salem, is a little more of a walk. Got to invest a little more sweat equity to get to that. But both of those, both upper and lower white waterfalls are in excess of 400 feet in height. So they're incredibly impressive waterfalls.
Yeah. What Mr. King is always real good about this when he was on, talking about some of the, yeah, you're looking at the waterfalls and the water coming down and the splash, and in the summertime it's nice and cool. In the wintertime it ices up and it makes really good pictures and all. But some of the rock formations, some of the plants you're going to see around it, they're just different when it comes to waterfall.
They are different. If anyone's ever been up to either Caesar's Head or Jones Gap and talked to the interpreter up there at the state parks, Tim Lee, he does a very great presentation on what he calls a spray cliff community.
Okay.
And so because of the constant moisture, because of the high humidity that is there all the time, you're right, you have a totally different group of plants that live up there. And of course, animals as well. There are abundant things like salamanders that are in these areas. For people that like to turn over rocks and look for those kinds of things, which is always fun. But it is a totally different environment, and it is something that you can really enjoy. Like you say, the waterfalls themselves are spectacular, sure. But everything around it is also incredibly diverse and full of life.
You know, you mentioned salamanders, and that's on this map. It talks about them. We took a tour last year with Joe Cassie Lakes. Tour, we rode out across the water, and right. Very good. I mean, it was really good. I really enjoyed doing that. Learned a lot, but we stopped and we caught some salamanders. And they were talking about how many different kinds of salamanders live in that area. It's like one of the most abundant places in the United States for salamanders.
It is. It's an incredibly diverse environment for things like salamanders. The two folks that run that company, Joe Cassie Lake Tours,
yes,
Brooks and Kay Wade, they came through our Upstate Master Naturalist program, and which is sponsored mostly by Clemson Extension, but also State Parks and DNR. And those two folks are
good.
They're very good, and they're very curious about everything.
Sure,
you know, that's neat to know that y'all went looking for salamanders when you're on the trip. They also do some great when the loons come back to Lake Joe Cassie. They do a lot of loon tours up there, which a lot of folks are not aware of, that we have loons in South Carolina.
Yeah. One of the coolest sounding birds out there. I guess technically they are a bird. They're not a duck.
It's waterfowl.
Waterfowl. Okay.
Yeah, but that sound of a loon calling, that is something truly beautiful and haunting. It's quite a thing to hear.
Melancholy, but at the same time, it's just really cool. Mm-hmm. Spent a week in Canada. I mean, way up in Canada. Took us 9 hours from Montreal driving to get there to a little cabin, a couple boats that the Coast Guard would just look at and shake their heads. And we fished for a week up there. And there were two pairs of resident loons. And so morning and evening, I would go out and sit on the dock and just listen to them. And it chills at the same time, but just you're like, this is really special. And we got that right here. Just never know. We talked about some of the fauna and all. This area has some hemlocks in it.
We do. Unfortunately, we also have something called the hemlock woolly adelgid.
Yes.
Which showed up in the early 2000s. And when you go to places, especially waterfalls,
yes,
because hemlocks, eastern hemlocks especially, like to be around water, they're usually found at streamsides. But when you go to a waterfall, now when you look out across a vista, what you see are a lot of what foresters call gray ghosts.
Right.
And that's dead or dying hemlock trees. And that's something that, I don't know. A lot of scientists are trying to search to find the answer, but it's looking like the eastern hemlock is going to be the chestnut tree of our generation, and is probably, at least in the forest landscape, is probably going to disappear at some point, you know, within this generation. So hopefully there's some foresters at Clemson University are looking to find the answer to eliminate the hemlock woolly adelgid. So hopefully they will come up with an answer to that.
Are we still inoculating those trees? Do we still go up there and work on those trees every year?
Yes. The hemlock woolly adelgid is easily controllable with some chemicals that folks use and have used, an insecticide for years. the difficulty is the massive scale of a landscape of millions of trees.
Right.
But in places where, like for instance, in Jocassee Gorges, we have another hemlock species called the Carolina hemlock that grows in high and on ridges. Our land manager, Mark Hall, for gosh, I guess at least the last decade, has contracted with arborists from North Carolina because they actually have to do some almost rock climbing to get to these trees. But those trees have been treated, and he was just talking the other day that it's about a 7-year cycle.
Okay.
The insecticide lasts about 7 years, 6 to 7 years on average, and he's getting ready to have those Carolina hemlocks up on Round Top Mountain, which is a mountain you can see from Sassafras.
Okay.
But he's about to have those hemlocks retreated. So in places where you take care of them and you have the funding and the labor to do it, you can save hemlocks.
Okay. And in the latest Jocassee Gorges Journal that we talked about earlier, Mary Rowe will love me for this. There's a new section of the Palmetto Trail that opens up that accesses the Carolina hemlocks you were just talking about.
Right. This is the Carolina Hemlock Loop. And one of the neat things about this, this is part of the Palmetto Trail,
right,
which is a program of the Palmetto Conservation Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it's in memory of John S. Rainey, who was a prominent South Carolina attorney, conservationist, and philanthropist. So if you're interested in that new section of the Palmetto Trail, if you go to the Palmetto Trail website, they have great maps and descriptions on there that you can find out where this is. But it's up near Sassafras.
Okay. Jocassee Journal, how do people get this? Because you sent me a copy, and then you sent me a link for
20 years worth.
Reading for years.
Yeah.
How do people access this newsletter?
They can go to the Jocassee Gorges website or the web page part of the DNR website, and there is a form that you can just fill out, and it comes to me. It's free to South Carolina residents, and I'll be glad to get you on the subscription list, and it's pretty easy to do that. Or if you just send me an email or just get in touch with me, give me your, I need your postal mailing address.
Okay.
And we can get you on the subscription list.
And because it's really neat. And in the last couple of minutes, I'm going to talk. You got an article here about the Sassafras Mountain Tower opening, which just happened. We talked about that. Dennis Chastain, local legend. I mean, goodness gracious.
Have you had Dennis on this show?
No, I have not.
You need to get him on here. It's interesting that you mentioned Dennis because you were talking about a Coney Bells.
Yes.
And Dennis has a description for everything.
Of course.
And he's quite a character if you haven't met him. But when he refers to a Coney Bells, which is a fairly rare plant,
sure,
specifically because of where it grows, but he says, Dennis says that Coney Bells are not rare, they're locally abundant. And he's true. Wherever you find them, you find literally thousands of them, but they're just not. It's this one little corner of God's earth where you find them, and that's about it.
Yeah. Going on, Beach Bottom Falls Trail is now open, another falls trail, 100-foot waterfall at the end of it. Talked a little bit about environmental classes offered at Holly Springs Center. Then you go on and cover Camp McCall, 60 years of Camp McCall.
Camp McCall. I went there as a child. I grew up Baptist. Like a lot of, I go to a Presbyterian church now, but almost all of the people that I go to church with grew up Baptist.
Sure.
I don't know how that happened, but Camp McCall, for the Royal Ambassadors,
yes,
the RAs, is just a beautiful place, and they do such a great job there. And the facilities director was actually talking to me recently. He wants to get with our fisheries biologists, and they want to introduce fly fishing up there is an activity, which I think is just an absolutely wonderful
idea. What a perfect fit.
Yes.
Perfect fit.
Yes.
Mary was on. Mary Rowe from Palmetto Conservation was on me last week, I believe. And we were talking about the women's weekend that they're going to have at Table Rock
State Park. I just found out about that yesterday, and that is a wonderful thing.
And we were going through, and she goes, "Now, Roger, you'll like this because right there we have a thing of fly fishing." And she goes, "You'd be amazed at the interest from women in that class." So what a natural fit for Camp McCall to introduce fly fishing. Talks about, we had some landslides up there with recent rains, cover that. Clemson study to aid ecosystem restoration through Duke Energy's Habitat Program article, and Camp Cedar Creek at Toxway. Is this a new camp or a new outdoor facility?
That is a new group camp that is at Kiwi State Park, and that was done by Duke Energy as part of their Kiwi Toxway relicensing effort. But it is a beautiful place, and you know, for groups, maybe even I think is like 50 to 100 people. They've got the facilities up there. They've got a lodge. They've got cabins, and it's just a beautiful facility that I'm sure as people find out about it, it's going to be in high demand.
Yeah, 13 acres, 10 tent camping sites, 3 camping cabins, bathhouse, lodge, 2 picnic tables, fishing pier, and a portage trail to Lake Kiwi. Then we talk, and then it goes on and talks in another article, talks about the Carolina Hemlock Loop that we talked about earlier, and then we talk. Mary is itching to talk about this too, the bridges that got taken out on the East Otoe Passage with the storms and all. So that is the Joe Cassie Journal. Get a hold of Greg and he'll set you up and you can get these. And we're a little bit over our break time, but I think if we go to break now, we'll pick it up and finish off the show with a little more on Joe Cassie Gorges, and we might be looking at a 10 to 12 month issue here. But it's good, because as long as Greg will drive over here, we'll do this again. So hang on through the break. More Woods and Water, South Carolina on the other side. You gotta love that song for what we're talking about. No hurry. If you're gonna go up there and experience Joe Cassie Gorges, don't be in a hurry.
Right. It's not a place that you wanna rush around.
No.
You wanna allow plenty of time. And I usually, when I tell people about even short forays, you know, to allow half a day, and you really ought to allow all day.
Sure. And take your time. Don't be in a hurry. Stop often. Take a good pair of binoculars. Look around you. There's so much there to see that in normal everyday lives, our eyes are not accustomed to seeing. They're not accustomed to picking up horizontal lines in a vertical forest. You know, just take a little time and look, because you're always going to be surprised at what you see.
You really are. Take a deep breath when you're there. Just look around and take a deep breath. And it's amazing how much it calms people down to get outside. You know, I know a lot of fancy psychologists and people are telling people that now, but we've known that, hadn't we, Roger,
sure,
for a long time, that
sure,
you get outside, the world slows down, and it just seems to make a lot more sense.
And things come in perspective. You know, there's two trails in Joe Cassie Gorges. That's the Palmetto Trail, which we touched just a little bit on, the spur that just opened, and Mary and I will, Mary Rose is going to come back on in September. We're going to do some more on the Palmetto Trail. So we'll just kind of, it's there, know it's there. And you can go back, and Mary and I'll try to cover it a little bit. But you're on the board for the Foothills Trail. The Foothills Trail is, our Joe Cassie Gorges is shot through with Foothills Trails, because that's part of, as you said, what Duke Energy, the mitigation they had to do for Bad Creek. And let's take this last segment, just do a little bit on the Foothills Trail.
It is an integral part of Joe Cassie Gorges. And by the way, I want to mention that if folks are listening in Pickens County, when you mention Joe Cassie Gorges to folks in Pickens County, yes, they look at you with a kind of a puzzled look, and then you say the horse pasture, and they go,
that's
"Oh,
right,
the horse,
yes,
pasture." So that's
horse pasture.
Pickens County has, I mean, I guess for generations called this area the horse pasture, but
That's the horse pasture river,
right? Horse pasture is one of those,
sure,
big four rivers, mm-hmm, that empties into Lake Joe Cassie. Absolutely.
Which are, let's see, you got the Thompson, the Whitewater, the horse pasture,
and the Toxway.
The Toxway, yes. Those are the four rivers.
Right. The Foothills Trail, which is now the Foothills Trail Conservancy, was dreamed about in the 80s by some folks that you would probably be familiar with over here in Greenville. But it really kind of became a reality when Duke Energy was looking at building the Bad Creek hydroelectric facility as part of making up for, you know, taking part of that mountain away to build that reservoir and that pump back facility. Duke agreed to build 45 miles of the Foothills Trail, and protect it and manage it and maintain it in perpetuity.
Oh, wow.
So that the Foothills Trail in its entirety is 77 miles from Oconee State Park to Table Rock State Park. But the 45-mile section that Duke Energy built is now within the Jocassee Gorges. Okay. So all of the land that was sold by Crescent Resources in Duke to the state of South Carolina includes the Foothills Trail. And it's a wonderful, wonderful trail, has great vistas. Part of it goes over Sassafras Mountain, so it goes over the highest point in the state.
That's right. There's a sign right there that Foothills Trail this way.
Right, exactly. You go right over the observation tower, but it also includes walks along the Chattooga River.
Okay.
Goes by more waterfalls than you can shake a stick at, and it's just a wonderful thing that we have in South Carolina. Actually, the Foothills Trail goes into North Carolina as well, around Lake Jocassee. So it's a great thing. One of the easiest places to do a day hike on the Foothills Trail now is when you're going up to Sassafras Mountain. You can kind of make a twofer here. On the way up to Sassafras, about 2 miles before you get to the top, there's a pull-off on the left, a little parking area. That's actually the Beach Bottom Falls access as well. But that is also where the Foothills Trail comes in, a road access. You can, if you have two vehicles, you can leave a vehicle there, leave one of your vehicles there, going up to the top of Sassafras Mountain, enjoy the view up there at the top, and then take the Foothills Trail, 2.7 miles back downhill to Chimney Top Gap. And so a great way to kind of combine a trip that way.
Foothills Trail, what are they walking on? Is that, you know, 12-inch wide skirting down the mountains, or are there some road beds or railroad track trails? I mean, what kind of difficulty levels on average would you expect on that trail?
It's a little bit of both. You do have some single track, I guess you'd call it, trail that might be 18, 27 inches wide, something like that. But you also, there are a lot of logging roads within Jocassee Gorges, so sometimes the Foothills Trail gets on an old logging road, and so you'll have a wide. And the difficulty, it ranges from nearly flat to maybe areas along the Chattooga River and the Whitewater River to some really steep, challenging portion. So you can get a little bit of almost anything. And of course, in the mountains, you can get some ups and downs. We had talked earlier about even if you're just going to take a day hike,
sure,
you always need to take a rain jacket.
Some of the things you need to take when you go up, pretty much on any outing, but especially when you're in the mountains.
If you're packing a go pack or a go bag to be in the mountains, you definitely need a rain jacket, because even if it's a blue sky above, you might run into rain just because that's the way mountains are. Always have extra water, of course. Okay. Sensible footwear is a good idea. I've seen people going up Table Rock Mountain in flip-flops. Yeah. Not a good idea.
Not a good thing to do.
Make sure, especially even if you're in the warmer months, you want to make sure you have some extra clothing to put on, or some dry clothing. So those are kind of some of the things that you need to think about if you're gonna be taking a walk.
Always check the weather, but never depend on the weather forecast, because it can change with the whim.
It is highly variable in the mountains. As some locals say, mountains make their own weather, and they do.
They do. Don't have Mount McKinley there. I've seen it make its own weather, but it does. We talked about the storms that come up, and a lot of times they hit the mountains. They dissipate. Sometimes they hit the mountains and blow up, and sometimes they start up there. So you just always need to be prepared, a Boy Scout motto. You know, we're not going to get to everything, and we knew we weren't. But there is some incredible fishing up in there. Some of these rivers we talk about, some of the streams, have some of the almost what you call blue ribbon trout streams up through there. Talking about bird watching, the wildlife, the hunting, just a lot of stuff. And wrapping up what will be our first segment on Jocassee Gorges, anything in the last, say, minute that you want to point out to people that we didn't get to, or something you want to reinforce we already talked about?
Well, I'd like to reinforce the fact that Sassafras Mountain is open and that people can go up there and enjoy it. It's an amazing view. We had some teacher development days up there from Pickens County Schools, And I've already had a conversation with an elementary school teacher, who a third grade teacher, that wants me to meet her up there to bring 80 students to the top. And there's so many lessons up there.
Sure.
There are watershed lessons. Yep. There, you know, there are birds that we only see up there that we don't see anywhere else. So there's a lot to learn, and I'm glad. I think every child in South Carolina needs to go up there as part of their South Carolina history education.
And when you're up there, yes, look around you and look out and see what all you can see, but look down, because the really cool thing about there is the compass that's in the center of that overlook. So you know exactly I'm looking north, east, south, and west. That's a really cool feature.
And right on the state line. So you can jump on one side and say, hey, I'm in North Carolina, and jump on the other side, hey, I'm in South Carolina, which is kind of, aren't North Carolina and South Carolina playing in football this weekend?
I don't know. Who cares about football? Greg, thank you. We'll do this again. Thanks for listening, folks. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can, because that's where South Carolina comes alive. And don't forget the camera. We'll see you next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Hit me from behind, 'cause I'm gone to